This is Interpreting Wine host and founder Lawrence Francis welcoming you to a special series celebrating the beauty and diversity of Slovenian wine. These episodes, recorded in September 2019, let you virtually travel with me on a personal tour organized by Mojca from Enjoy Slovenia Travel and Wine. The episodes, to be released in the order in which they were recorded, will let the country unfold for you in the same way that it did for me. For more information about wine tourism in Slovenia, please visit enjoy-slovenia.com. Wines from the producers featured in the series can be ordered at fineslovenianwine.com. And to discuss ordering wines or the possibility for touring this amazing country, do be sure to email Mojca at info@enjoy-slovenia.com. Today's episode of the Slovenia Travel and Wine Special features Zala and Janis Šekoranja of Vino Graben. Starting our journey in the far east of the country, almost on the Slovenian border, father and daughter team Janis and Zala make a huge selection of wines from vines grown on a little over 7 hectares. Working on a human scale, their philosophy is to let the wine express the nature of the grapes they grow, which means they produce more than 100 different wines, some in minute quantities, and the diversity speaks for itself. We first hear from Zala the origin story of the estate, and she takes us through the different styles of wine before leading a tasting of 9 of their wines. And in the way that it was recorded on the night, Janis chips in strategically with his own origin story and also details of a decanter that he has designed and patented, which is now sold all over the world, before Zala looks outside of the winery and the wider impact of their wines. Enjoy.
We're located at the southeastern part of Posavje region, more specifically Bizeljsko, which is very near Croatian border, and you don't come here by accident. You don't just drive by Bizeljsko. You have to go specifically to our region to get here. So we're kind of a small gem, hidden gem, in this part of Slovenia. Vineyards are at home. Here. They love it because our region goes among 10 most sunny places in Europe. Mm-hmm. In 2002, we actually held the first place. There's the sunny door, which you've seen at the entrance at the Repnica cellar. There's an ornament which represents the rays of the sun. Mm-hmm. And every significant room or building has this kind of entrance with the sunny door on it. There are about 800 hectares of vineyards in Bizeljsko, most of them planted with Rumeni plavets, from the white sorts, then Rieslings, Sauvignon Blanc, then Chardonnay. There's a lot of Chardonnay here. The tradition of winemaking has been quite long in my family, more than 200 years, I suppose, because the property that we're now on has been family-owned for good 2 centuries. It was inherited through the family, and in the end, my parents bought it from my father's uncle, so it stayed in the family, and it was just at the right moment when we were expanding our vineyards, because my parents, well, they started in a completely different world. I'm a city child, for that matter. My father worked in a pharmaceutical industry, and my mother was a bank teller. And she says that for as long as she has known my dad, he always wished to live out of the vineyards one day, solely from making wine. At one point, yeah, we did that as a family. My parents, well, they sold my father's company. We sold our apartment and we moved to the countryside with the vineyards and everything. They started, well, with one small vineyard, which is now mine, with Chardonnay, and then expanded from the good 1,000 grapevines now into 40,000. About nowadays we have about 45 different varieties planted, because for us it's not only a business, it's a way of life, it's a lifestyle in which we enjoy really very much, and there's always so much new things to try in the wine business, in the wine making actually. New varieties, new approaches. Not 2 years are alike, and with that, yeah, our wine palette is expanding really vastly. And this moment, we have more than 200 wine labels of our own production, and about 60 of the wines which are still in the tanks, barrels, and or already in the bottles but not ready yet for the market, and they're waiting to be sent out.
I think naturally then kind of flows from there is then just to ask you to kind of expand a little bit on the style. I mean, I know we were talking before a little bit about the, you know, the different styles that you make, you know, given the terroir and given the variety of grapes around here. So maybe just bring in, you know, what is your kind of, in a sense, your house style, and potentially then kind of relate that back to, you know, where these, some of these grapes are grown, and what types of grapes are growing in what type of position.
Let's say a couple of wines that are in style with our house, but the main philosophy is we try to listen to the wine, to the material that we get into the cellar. As I said before, not 2 years are alike, and if you want to get the best out of a certain harvest, you have to accommodate your approach to the material that you have in the cellar. So, you know, that idea of, I can relate to this thought with my Chardonnay. I'm in charge of the Chardonnay production in our house. It's kind of a family thing. And that gets passed on because Chardonnay, the vineyard of the Chardonnay is our teaching vineyard. And with that also comes the making of the Chardonnay. My personal taste for my consumption is dry wine. I like dry wine. I like dry Chardonnays. But the material that that vineyard produces requires it to have at least 6 to 8 grams of residual sugar. That makes me mad because I want to make dry Chardonnay. But if I want to make a good Chardonnay out of that grapes, it has to have residual sugar. This is the philosophy of our house. And yeah. There are some different types of wines that we like to produce each year, if it's possible, like the macerated Pinot Gris, dried Traminer of selection, a couple of red blends, which are also new because the vineyard which we have most of our red varieties is new, and huge, so I decided to dabble in certain blends. It started with an experiment, but now it became an annual thing. A certain blend, hopefully you'll try it later.
To be fair, that is certainly, you know, I like that answer because I think, you know, that really for me tells a difference between the philosophy and essentially what you're trying to do, you know, because I think there's a lot of winemakers out there who are kind of trying to control nature, and due to the scale, due to the market, essentially, they're being asked to make the same wine every year. Completely independently of whether it was a hot year, whether it was a cold year, whether it was rainy, just, you know, to produce the same style every year. And I think what you've answered there, you know, I think it's really just an important thing to keep putting out there, you know, because I think there's still a lot of consumers out there who believe that it's right or it's easy or it's in some way expected that you can have the same wine every year from the same producer from the same region. No, you have differences. You have differences. You have microclimates. You have different years. You have frost. You have hail. No year is the same. And I think any winemaker who is, you know, just, you know, listening to the grapes and listening to essentially what nature is giving them and doesn't try to fight against that, then, you know, in my experience, that's resulted in a more authentic wine and maybe, you know, a wine that speaks of its place, it speaks of its terroir and actually is kind of communicating in its own way what's happening in the region around it.
The principle of making our Pinot Gris is 45 days of maceration, semi-argon carbon dioxide maceration. For 45 days. Pure chance that my father and I will alternate from year to year who makes the Pinot Gris. And with the same procedure, with the same technology, it varies from year to year, not only from the climate of that year, but I would say our long-term guests who know our wines, who know my father or me, they know the difference. We actually made some blind tastings and they got it right, who made which one. And I actually learned that technology from my dad. I don't alternate it. I do not. But you know, there's difference in which day you stop the fermentation not the fermentation because it's dry. It goes all the way to the end. But when you take the clear wine off that yeast and when you bottle it, and actually gives us completely different results. You'll try one of his and one of mine, just for fun of it. It kind of gets to the point you were trying to make about how even from the same approach, you get completely different results. We produce 15 to 20 new wines each year, and because it's extremely a lot to manage for one person, even for two, we divide. There are some of the projects that are solely his, there are some projects which are solely mine, but in all others, at some point we decide, or it's pure chance who is in the cellar at this moment. If the person who checks in the wine, also checks it out.
We're sat here in the cellar. We've had a very short tour and very atmospheric here. You probably hear a little bit of the echo. There are loads of bottles lined up here. I don't know exactly how we're going to end up with this tasting, but yeah, I think kind of over to you. You know, take us inside the bottle and, you know, let us know the history of that particular wine and, you know, a little bit perhaps about, you know, what went into making it.
The first wine that you have in your glass is of my choice. It's a must when you are in our region, and it's a must when you first enter our cellar. It's from a variety called Rumeni Plavec. And direct translation to English means yellow-blue. Rumeni means yellow-blue, Plavec means blue. And it probably the name probably comes from the color of the grapes, which are blue when they're supposed to be green. Mm-hmm. And that bluish color changes somewhere in the middle of the ripening period into golden yellow. And just named it like that. Mm-hmm. Rumeni Plavec. Most of this variety grows in our region because it likes it best here. And to this moment, to my knowledge, it's still the only known sort of variety of grapes in the world which has no residual maleic acid. It actually transfers its all into wine or tartaric acid still in the grapes. So normally, obviously, the lactomalic secondary fermentation cannot be done with this variety. What does it mean for an end consumer? This wine is a bit more acidic on taste because tartaric acid is a bit more spicy. But it's very, very gentle and very, very stable. So the types of wines made out of Rumeni Plavec are known for its extremely long lifespan. The oldest wine that we have in our cellar, of our own production, of course, is Rumeni Plavec of 1946. It was first after World War harvest of my grandfather. Nobody knows where he got the bottles, where he got the corks. There are some bottles with half of the cork, probably because he had to top it up to cork all the bottles. And it's still drinkable. The color is hideous. You shouldn't look at it when drinking, but the variety is still recognizable. We use it from time to time with, at some specialized wine tastings and even at when chemical analysis are done, but we try to do that with one bottle only because there are, I think, 16 of them left.
Okay, and what, like, what year is this?
This one is 2013. Late harvest, completely dry. Rumeni Plavec originally goes among mineral types of wines, but as you have probably already smelled and tasted, this one is not. Every couple of years, 67 to be approximately exact, somehow it happens that it gets completely fruity. In years like this one, which had relatively wet spring, then enough sun, but still not a drought. And the wine that came out of it was extremely fruity in the citrus field, to be more descriptive. But usually it's a lot more neutral. This thing happened in vintages of 2007, 2008, and then again in 2013. Of 2019, I'll let you know. It's still on the vines. As it's being very stable variety and very neutral originally, it's perfect for a base as a base for sparkling wines, and also for one thing that most of sparkling wines aren't able to do, and that is being matured. Because we all know that most of sparkling wines, caves, champagnes, have to be drank in about 5 to 6 years, most. But this one can stay fresh for extremely long time. So yeah, people in our region use it quite well for nowadays mass production of sparkling wine. It's popular, so yeah, most of local winemakers go, where popularity goes.
Sure, sure.
Does it have a specific name? The style of sparkling you're talking about there. Presumably that you're talking about the kind of method champenois. Or, over here.
Yeah, it's a classical type, méthode classique, but with a twist. People here, we change that part, you know, when you use underripe grapes for, because of the acidity and everything, that, well, to keep the sparkling wines fresh, and change it with overripe Romani plavits. You get the acidity and you get the freshness and you also get the stability and its ability to be matured. So it's no wonder that one of the best producers of sparkling wines in the world comes from our region. Pinot Gris, as I learned today, the difference between Grigio and Gris in Britain. This one is of 2007, a selection already, completely dry, and one thing that all of our Pinot Gris have in common is the maceration, approximately 45 days, in a closed environment, in a closed tank, under a combination of argon gas and carbon dioxide gas. Both very useful. Well, first of all, carbon dioxide is, it's cheaper. Argon, as it being an inertive gas, this is a good quality of it, and also of it being extremely heavy gas. And with the maceration, it helps to extract the sweet tannins, which are along the seeds of the grapes. And with that, you get a lot fuller wine, a bit more sweeter on the taste. Obviously, this is a dry wine, but you get that sweeter aroma. And also, it prolongs the lifespan of the wine. Because there are a lot of things in the wine itself that acts as preservants, and tannins are one of them. Also, it helps us produce this type of wine without any additional sulfates. This one actually goes among this trendy orange wines. I hate the label orange wines because it doesn't do justice to all the macerated white wines, because the tradition of macerating white wines is very, very long. It's not as old as orange wine. It's a lot older. And why did people do that? They try to have the wine at least till the next season. The third wine is, again, Pinot Gris, 2015 selection. Again, dry. The same procedure as the previous one, 45 days of maceration. Again, controlled maceration and fermentation later on. Two major differences. First, the year of the harvest, and the author of 2007 was my dad, and this one, 2015, was made by me. And the rest is for you to find out.
I love it.
You set me a challenge, so to say something here. I think it's super interesting, to know now all of that, and now that your dad has joined us here at the table to hear us talk. I think it's one of those things that, for me actually, trying the 15 then really reinforces how fresh the 7 is. I think that it's still got such good acidity, and I don't feel that there is that mental arithmetic 8 years of difference between them, if that makes sense. I do, there's certainly I'm getting more of a savory note, I would say, from the 7. But how much of that is youth, or how much of that is your in your hand on there? who knows? I guess it's one of those interesting things of, you know, that's where time will tell, really, isn't it? Because I think that when you then draw these things out and maybe, yeah, build up that library that you've been speaking about, that's when you can kind of, yeah, play around with those interesting tastings and just, yeah, let the wine speak to you as the grape spoke to you in its production.
No, my life was so a little bit strange for somebody because I've been working for a long time in pharmaceutical industry. Then I've been going abroad out of Yugoslavia ex, in Denmark, then in Austria. And then I have decided one day I have sold my company in Austria. I've came back. I've bought some new vineyards or more vineyards with some point. Pointed, it was on that we have as much as possible different soil, terroir. Today we have five different terroir, five vineyards, five really different soil position. Here we have pure silicate, then we have silicate, alumus silicate, then we have alumus silicate carbonate, and then pure carbonate soil. Because of this, in the moment, we have the possibility to plant, or we have planted a lot of different grapes. In the moment, we have 45 different sort of grapes. We haven't planted so by occasion. We have planted it under experiences. I've been looking what sort, on which terroir, which soil works perfectly, no? And with some, maybe more than 10 varieties, new varieties, we are experimenting now. But I'm really very satisfied about this because in everything what we have planned, we have reached perfect wine out. No, and then I have left all my basic job, my basic work, and today I'm working only with vineyards, or I'm doing this. No, and also through this, what I've done on this field, I've been invited from European Wine Knights Brotherhood. Maybe you've seen there that seal. No, I've been invited there. Even that I am not in their line, and that has helped me or has gave me another approach to wine growing. That is sophisticated approach to wine growing. Now, in the moment, we have 236 different own wine. I'm quite sure that you have no in Europe somebody that has such a palate wine, and that we are producing only premium quality wine from, we call it predicate wine. It means late harvest, chosen grapes, chosen berries. Ice wine, we have done it, but we are not doing it. Dry chosen berries, yes. And maybe Zala has shown you, we have had really through the luck, we have had great success on the world with this. So that we have been rewarded with more than 130 gold medals, 16 great gold medals, 7 absolute champions, 3 European champion, 1 European vice champion. On Tramin Olympiade, we have been once between first 3 on the world. What should I say? You have a lot of these things more that we... Yeah, but so before we have been unknown, no one. But now we have got some name and now we have some clients. We are not great one. We have 40,000 plants. That's nothing, 40,000 wines. But we have reached something on this world. So that,
and I think you know. Well, I think what would be interesting to hear a bit about is, you know, I guess your own view on those medals and that kind of feedback that you're getting. I mean, do you have a sense of kind of some of the feedback of, you know, what it is about the wines that the people are particularly enjoying? I mean, you spoke a little bit there about the production being, you know, the more sort of the late harvest. Feel free to bring in the sort of the region or, you know, anything else that you kind of do in the cellar there. What do you think it is that makes the wines that you're producing here kind of different and stand out even on that kind of world market?
Look, let's start with nature. Is not every year the same one? Is not every sort of the grape every year the same? And so you have to have some feeling. What should be, what can you get for such a type of grapes, or what is the, which high of harvesting will you take out? And that is for me a challenge. Every year that I have here in our wine cellar, because that is one of, we have five of them, that I have in fermenting, for example, 30, 35 different sort of must. That is what I'm interested for. And normally on the end, when we are producing a wine that finds a client, that he's satisfied, because I am still looking on that Latin proverb, de gustibus non est disputandum, because everybody has his own taste, and we are not discussing about this. That is my my main motto. But every wine finds his soul that likes it.
And I've got to ask, I mean, I think it's, yeah, certainly the largest number of different lines of wines that I've really come across. And, you know, walking around the cellar here, I use the word, it's at a very human scale. You know, there are not these sort of gigantic stainless steel vats that you can find in some cellars. You know, everything is, you know, I can almost get on tiptoes and kind of look in there. And I'm just curious, I mean, I'm not going to ask, you know, what is your favorite, because I think it's you know, the most challenging question to ask, and, you know, not necessarily the most interesting question either. But I'm just curious, though, you know, you know, what do you kind of, yeah, you know, we're at the start of harvest time now. I mean, you know, what are the sorts of wines that you've been sort of looking to and, you know, kind of, I guess, looking forward to at this sort of time of year, you know, September harvest time, that, you know, and this, given the sorts of foods that are around and the, you know, I guess the sort of weather that you're experiencing here?
For the first, you have to know now something. Now we have started with harvesting. Should last 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. Nobody knows. It depends on weather, the grape behavior, I say so in Klemme. Then I am deciding, with this grape we will go on, with another not. And as I take this less like art, for me it's every wine. Every wine, it's like a picture, like an art product, no? And I'm very satisfied when somebody finds his heart or his soul in some wine, in another not. But for me, it's always a challenge. If somebody says, I don't like full-bodied wine, I don't like aromatic wine, I don't like sweet wine, I don't like that, immediately I'm excited. I will show you. I will show you that even we have had here once. Okay, I will not tell the name. One great company owner and general manager, the company which makes about 12 billions of euro per year. And when I have been asking him, what the type of wine do you prefer? What do you want? He said, everything but ABC. what's ABC, what do you mean? Then his adjutant has said so by side to me, that is anything but Chardonnay. Okay, it was for me a challenge. Then I have, in one wine, I have forgot, because through the wine that he was tasting, I found his taste. Then I have brought from archive downstairs one Chardonnay, and I have put in the glass that, but I have forgot. So I forgot to tell him that it's Chardonnay. Oh, that's a great one. Oh, that's perfect. What you have said? Oh, excuse me. That's ABC. Excuse me. I'm deeply sorry.
Exactly. You wouldn't like it.
Yeah, that's nice, no?
It is the fourth in a row. We're still in the dry waters. Traminer, or Slovenian Traminec. It's quite popular variety in the Steiermark region, both Slovenian and Austrian. But normally you would get it at least semi-sweet, or even sweet, because this is a variety of grapes that produces enormous amounts of sugar, along with quite high amounts of sugar-free extracts. And with us being in the eastern part of Slovenia, Štajerska region, which is known for higher acidities, all these ingredients that I mentioned, they all act as inhibitors of the fermentation. Mm-hmm. And it's probably the reason that most of the Traminers are at least a bit sweet. So this type of wine is one of the most difficult wines to produce, to convince a selection type of Traminer to ferment completely. It's like almost mission impossible. It took my dad quite a few years to find the right selection of yeast to work in this type of an environment, because the alcohols get very high, acidities are high, and the yeast, simply they die. So first challenge wasn't so big in comparison to the next. When he found the right selection of yeast, he had to determine the procedure of the fermentation, because this type of yeast is extremely exothermic. It produces enormous amounts of heat, and you have to cool it down. But if you cool it down too much, there is no way in that you'll start the fermentation again. Yeah. So he had to find the right temperature at which this fermentation takes place. And this one in particular, Traminer of 2009, fermented for almost 2 years. 2 years of fermentation, then another 3 in the tanks and barrels, and then coupling it all together, and now it's in this glass.
Totally unique, I would say. I just think, yeah, everything about it, really, the color is, yeah, it looks as though it's got some age, potentially, as we now know, some skin contact. But yeah, super light though, I would say, on the nose, but you know, it doesn't smell like an unbalanced wine. You know, there's just some very nice harmonious, almost sort of almondy, peachy, you know, sort of stone fruity type aromas. But I think, yeah, it just really comes alive for me in the mouth. I just think there's that sort of lightness there, complexity, but then there's this sort of really nice minerality, salinity that I get coming out at the end. And yeah, I think you just said this. This is a winter wine. I gotta say, I can imagine myself having this all year round. I just think it's that good. And I think it, you know, it maybe again is kind of calling for some food and something just to sort of play with it. But it's just really, really enjoyable wine. And yeah, great to know a bit of the background, and you know, just I guess how unique this really is.
Yeah, mate.
Yeah, we're in the red waters now, but still, That's rice. Gamay of 2007, late harvest. Most of wine connoisseurs, compare the Gamays with the Beaujolais, or this is for most the same story, because most of the Beaujolais stand on Gamay variety. But not many people know that this variety precedes France. It actually originates in Alexandria Valley, in Luxor Valley, in Alexandria, in Egypt. And somewhere along those years, it found its way into France. They call it Gamay's second home. It grows fabulously in France, but it's perfect only for young type of wines, Beaujolais type of wines. It also grows fabulously in Slovenia. And we have about 35 different types of Gamay now that we know of. In Europe and in Slovenia, and most of them again are only suitable for young wines. They don't have the body to be left on its own or to be ripened. And this variety in particular, called Gamay Bois de Serre, was brought to our vineyards by my grandfather in early 60s. First, it grew on the limestone, and again, it was only suitable for light annual type of wines, Beaujolais types of wines, if you have it. And then we changed the vineyard of choice and moved the vines to, not vines, but their kids, to Silica Sand, to another property where it blossomed, and we got the reverse effect, in which case this wine isn't drinkable for the first 3 years. It needs to be ripened, and it's to be ripened right, and for quite a while. So we are putting our Gamays on the market at least 7-8 years old. Yeah. As I said, this one is 2007. We just started slowly leaking 2009 on the market, but just everything else is still in the barrels, in the tanks, being being perfected. In our previous discussion, we talked about the roundness of the wine, its qualities not standing out, and how important is of the wine being balanced, so it holds itself up. This wine, Gamay 2007, its alcohol content is 10%. It's extremely, extremely light. And you'll tell me your impressions of a 12-year-old wine with 10% alcohol content, please.
Yeah, that's again totally unique. I think from the color of it, I mean, is deep. You know, is sort of for me deeper than some of the the young Gamays that you might have out there. It doesn't necessarily have that sort of brilliant quality in the glass that they have. But it's a more serious looking wine, I would therefore say. But then when you get it in the mouth, it's still got all of those types of elements that you're expecting, the cherry, the red fruit, the crunchiness or at least the freshness, I would say, and really decent acidity, but it all just feels you know, beautifully harmonized, like it's, you know, a sort of a mature Gamay, and Gamays don't mature, do they? But if they did, and they do, then this is what it tastes like.
So I've chosen this one for tonight, just for a comparison. Because, as I said, 2007 was a very challenging year for vintners and for winemakers. And 2009, again, completely different. But as we did before with the Pinot Gris, you know, 2007 and 2015 is a lot of years apart. This one, these two are a bit closer, and the years weren't so different, so very different in production. So it's just for your experience.
Thank you.
I think, yeah, the 09 is still tasting so young as well. Still, yeah, that kind of lip-smacking freshness, and yeah, all those sour cherries and all the, you know, all the good flavors that you expect. Still got that lovely, rich, deep color. In a sense, though, it's just, yeah, it's got a little bit more power, I would say. I think it's got a couple of percent more alcohol there. But yeah, just again, just, you know, tastes super fresh. Again, an 09 Gamay versus an 07 Gamay. And, you know, for me, these are just, could potentially just go, you know, very nicely together. You know, maybe the 07 earlier on in the evening, leading forward into an 09 a bit later on. But yeah, just lovely drinking, and yeah, Gamay. Gamay can age, yeah. It's we proved it.
It works on the principle of cold chimney. I've made this thermodynamic account as what is the diameter of entrance and exit. And what happens? When you put inside the wine, it is quicker till 10 times the normal decanter without this south pipe. No, and then second, I think it's if you have heavy sediment, when you are putting it, it stays here. Then it's laser cut it, that put it with hand. It's laser cut it, and you have stop drop effect. Everything. And till 10 time quicker opens the wine than normal decanter. Now it's to everybody simple, but somebody has to invent it. It is made in Rogaška crystal here in Slovenia, made from barium crystal, and you have there some things, hidden things that we haven't patented it, because then everybody can do it. How it's because glass is liquid, no, solid liquid, and for me it was really great, great thing. I've been astonished when we have tested it, when we have tried. It's for white wine, for red wine, for everything.
I got to say, when you put this out just before, it kind of did take me aback a little bit, because you know, I guess I've been conditioned and, you know, very much used to seeing the kind of the classic shape. But as you say, you know, times move on, you know, technologies move on, and you know, at the end of the day, when you put a wine into a decanter, you're wanting to open it up to drink it.
This is based on physical chemistry. In short words, when you have the same concentration over and under liquid, in liquid and over in the decanter, then stops opening the wine. Here, circulates, and then you have opening and opening and opening and goes on. But that is dangerous weapon. Why? Because it goes on till oxidizing the wine. For that, when wine is open, you have to drink it.
I guess two things really then. So for how long has this been already out there in the market? And then, yeah, what is like potentially some of the feedback you're getting from sommeliers and, you know, people who are using this in service?
I have invented this in the year 2000. And then has happened some things, I can say, some strange things, you know, concurrency and that and that. But now it's recognized by our Ordo Equestre Suini Europei as an official decanter, as that glasses, as you have seen. And I'm very proud on this, because if you invent something, it means nothing if it's not recognized like something usable. I have sold the right to sell it further to one German-Slovenian company, and now they are trading with all over the world.
Le Grand Cinq, 2015, a selection. This is my baby. Actually, it's the first vintage, or the first harvest, out of our new vineyard, which was planted in 2013. It holds 16,000 grapevines. Few reds and few whites, but all of the reds combined from the first bigger harvest in 2015 are in this bottle. Why Le Grand Cinq, or the Big Five? Because it's combined or blended. It's a blend of five great grape varieties: Blau Frankish, Pinot Noir, Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Merlot. All of these are unique on their own and very strong-bodied, very determined. Combining two can be quite a challenge. Three, heroic. Five, pure luck. Because, you know, of 16,000 grapevines, we got a good 1,000 liters of the juice. And we decided to keep it all together. In the first 2 months of first maceration and then fermentation, I found it interesting. Then I found it exhilarating. Then I found it extremely demanding with the nurture and everything. And then I fell in love. It's a wine, as my dad said, of my soul. It describes me, to me. Actually describes the way I'm seeing the world right now. So yeah, I'm quite emotionally attached to this one, as you may hear it. And since then, we decided to do 1,000 liters of this one each year. Otherwise, we wanted to keep each and every of these varieties on their own. But yeah, we also make a blend each year of this, and Le Grand Cinq will stay.
What's amazing, again, I think for me, is just the amazing color here. It's just, you know, such a deep, rich, ruby color. And then, you know, that follows through, I think, into the nose is, yeah, again, quite intense. And the palate, yeah, there's kind of a hint, I would say, of all of those. I don't think I don't think this tastes like a single varietal of any of the five. I think that they're all sort of playing together with each other, super imbalanced, and, you know, amazing. I guess the faith that you have when you're planting, that coming through into the cellar, you know, that is speaking to what is out there, isn't it? That's speaking to what's going to happen in the year. And lovely and super drinkable. And yeah, I think it's one of those ones that I just think will just get better and better even as the years go on. Really nice.
Chardonnay of 2015. We're kind of switching off in the years and in this wine tasting. So we're back again in 2015. One of the types of wines that I'm solely in charge of in our cellar is the Chardonnay. It's been challenging me since 2007. As I said, it cannot be done completely dry, so this one is semi-sweet. I'm getting there, and maybe someday I will manage to make it completely dry. This one, it's really, really soft, really gentle, but on the other hand, a very large wine. Actually got it won a first place on one of the last year's world challenges and a couple of other things. So along of it being my challenge, obviously other people like it more than I do. And yeah, we're in sort of mutual agree to disagree feeling with this one. Sorry. It's my menace.
Again, you know, you can probably hear I've got a huge smile on my face. Mainly, well, a number of different things, I think. One is I'm trying to think through the Rolodex and come up with a semi-sweet Chardonnay, and I'm not aware that I've ever had one. But then when we get into, you say, the sort of the, you know, the sweeter realm of the wines here, it, then the sorts of things that I'm looking for are the depth of flavor and the length, which, you know, it absolutely has. But I mean, my palate just won't, you know, condone, I guess, a really sort of heavy, sort of cloying wine, and, you know, which it absolutely isn't, but it just has an amazing texture. It's sort of viscosity, almost, I want to say, just left on the inside of the mouth. It's almost reminded me a little bit of the sort of texture you sometimes get from Viognier, you know, that sort of slightly oily. But it just sort of holds on in this really pleasing way that just draws out the length of it, and, you know, just means that there's more flavor to go through. And yeah, really good wine.
Okay, so final.
Let's say final. 2012 Traminer. Grape selection of very sweet level. One of our latest accomplishments. Again, this one's one of our winners of international wine championships. And this one was the first sweet Traminer that I personally have ever made. Again, between this little duel between my dad and I. Traminers were always his world, because this is a very difficult variety to produce and to make a relatively good wine out of it. Classical type of our sweeter Traminers. A bit woody, but this one was straight stainless steel from the beginning to the end. But you get that dusky feeling. The Traminer is a dusky variety. And still, the acidity, which is quite high, keeps it drinkable. Although the residual sugar is about 45 grams.
Probably one for the records, you know, a wine with 45 grams of residual sugar, which, I'll be honest with you, if I see that normally, I'm running away. But that's absolutely gorgeous. As I was just saying, I enjoy the nose. Again, mainly enjoy dry wines. And there's almost this sort of savory characteristic that I genuinely, I don't get much from sweet wines. You know, that again, they're usually a little bit, a huge generalization, but they're usually a bit more simplistic. For me, they're usually, you know, the fruit and honey, or, you know, there's usually that sort of sweeter note. But this has definitely got, for me, a marked savory note. But then, yeah, and then into the mouth, you've still got all of the, you know, I guess the depth of flavor. And but it must just be, you know, the harmony, I guess, is what I want to say. You know, it's that freshness, that acidity. And, you know, you can sort of analyze wines in a very left brain way and break them down and look at the components. But yeah, the fact is, you know, when this all comes together and when it's in the mouth and in the glass, it just works. I always just like to sort of, you know, give my guest the final word, really. I don't like to have the final word, and just sort of, you know, ask you to sort of just, yeah, take us a little bit outside of the cellar, outside of the region, and just, yeah, just talk a little bit about how these wines are being enjoyed out there in the marketplace. And, you know, maybe what are some of the conversations and maybe some of the feedback that you're getting from about these wines?
Well, our wines, I think, have seen a lot more world than I have. They've been shipped all over because we have one mass market, that's US. And don't get me wrong, mass market by our seller standards, which means about 5,000 bottles per year. And all the rest, because we like our wines and we like our customers and we know personally most of them, we ship all over, even a single bottle. And yeah, from most of our end customers, we get a feedback, either it's Facebook mention or a tweet. I have no idea. My father has it. I don't. Those small, you know, breadcrumbs from here and there, that's enough for me. But still, the biggest anecdote that happened, one that I'll probably remember for the rest of my life, is two Aussie chicks, Australian girls, who about 10 years ago, literally walked into our yard, backpackers. We are about 1,500 meters from the main road. So yeah, they literally walked into our yard with a newspaper clipping about our winery and my dad. We had no idea that one of our guests was a journalist from Australia. And they were so intrigued by the story about our wines that they made their whole backpacking journey through Europe in that manner that they could stay 2 days at our cellar and try as many wines as possible. And it looked like this. They walked into the yard with the newspaper clipping in hand. Is this the right place? Like, yes. And, well, the rest is history. They still buy our wines.
Thank you so much, Zala and Yanis. As I'm sure you could hear, this was a very unique way to start off the travels. And I think the way that Zala explained the wines truly showed that these are labors of love and well worth seeking out. I've left below the link to the Vino Graben section on the Fine Slovenian Wine website, as well as details of all of the wines that we tasted. For more information about wine tourism in Slovenia, do please visit enjoy/slovenia.com. To order wines from the series, do be sure to visit fineslovenianwine.com. And you can also email Mojca any questions you might have at info@enjoy/slovenia.com. And if you're not already, I would love to have you following along with me on social media, where I'm at Interpreting Wine on Instagram and Facebook, at Wine Podcast on Twitter, and email hello@interpretingwine.com. See you next time.